Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and today I don't have a guest. We're going to talk about my job as a sex therapist. Lies we're told about sex, approaches to sex therapy, what may lead to success or failure in some cases, how to have bad sex, what makes a great lover, and what I've learned as a sex therapist. I think that this program, Love, Lust, and Laughter, is picking up momentum because I heard from a fan just this morning via my Facebook that he's listening in Turkey, the country Turkey. So we are heard from far and near, and that's exciting because I do really want this show to make a difference for people. And gradually, we are getting even callers. We had Liz last week when I was fortunate enough to be in studio because I was in New York City, and that was really fun. And she won a copy of Jamie Waxman's wonderful book called Getting Off. And so a little bit later, you stay tuned because I'm going to ask a question. What is your definition of a great lover? And there are lots of different answers, but the first person who calls in on the air with the definition of a great lover will win 2 volumes of Great Sex for a Lifetime, volumes 1 and 2, produced by the Sinclair Institute. And I narrated these volumes along with Dr. Lori Buckley, who has also been on this program. So we're going to have some fun. I'm not sure what's happened to my sidekick, Billy Sage, but he's in Hawaii, and so I can manage without him, although he's a delight, and we always appreciate Bill Sage. So people wonder, you know, they'll ask me, well, how do you describe your role as a sex therapist? And a sex therapist, well, she can be or he can be a psychiatrist, a marriage and family therapist, a psychologist, a clinical social worker. And we are, of course, specifically trained in sex therapy methods. I go personally to 3 or 4 conferences a year where there's all kinds of education, and sometimes I even give papers at these conferences. And ASECT is one, American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Teachers, and the other is QuadS, Scientific Society for Study of Sexuality. Now, a sex therapist does not, and including me, of course, we don't tailor, we do tailor our treatment to the person or persons before us, and we're never a big hammer, with that in quotes, to coerce a person who wants less sex into wanting more, although discrepancy of desire is the most common problem that we see, the most common presenting issue. And also, as sex therapists, we have a lot of acceptance of different sexual orientations and transgender existence. And I have never, ever met a sex therapist who tried to cure homosexuality. There may be some in the mental health field that attempt to do so, but not a sex therapist. Never. So I thought it might be interesting to begin with some lies that we're told about sex, because there are a lot. And one of them is that sex is natural and simple, and that you should know just how to do it. It's really strange if you think about it that we're taught how to perform most other basic human behaviors, eating, communicating, eliminating, and then as we get a little older, we learn some of the more complicated things, behaviors and reading and writing and driving a car and working. And yet, we're just supposed to know how to have sex. So that's really the first lie that we're told, that it's natural and simple and we should know exactly how to do it. And by the way, dear listening audience, if any of these resonates for you, do call in. You don't have to call in, as I'm going to discuss later in this show, what makes a great lover and your definition of a great lover. But if any of the whoever calls in first is going to get volumes 1 and 2 of Great Sex for a Lifetime, which is targeted at baby boomers, but all ages can appreciate this. There are couples performing explicit sex in response to what Dr. Buckley and I are talking about. We're talking heads. The next lie we're told about sex is that sex is gender. You know, that men are from sex-crazed Mars and women are from soft and romantic Venus. And I think that this lie can take a number of forms. Women just want to cuddle. Men just want to have raunchy sex. And women are great communicators. And men can't talk about their sexual feelings. Another form that this lie might take is that men want sex all the time, women don't. And that men are more visual than women when it comes to sexual arousal. Well, regarding that last point, men can be more visual, but I think that a lot of women, as they mature and develop more sexual confidence, realize that they, if they give themselves permission, that they can indeed be aroused by the visual. Another lie we're told about sex is that sex is spontaneous. Don't talk about it, just do it. I think that if sex is meant to be something fun and exciting, something that makes you feel good about your body and yourself, makes you feel loved and attended to, well, then why in heaven's name would planning for sex ever be a bad thing? You know, we can plan a night out on the town, and within that plan, we can have some spontaneous kinds of happenings. The other thing that works against sex being spontaneous is that especially guys with performance anxiety, they get into, oh, we have a job to do here. And it becomes work and it's not very spontaneous. In Masters and Johnson's work, and my next point will be to talk about approaches to sex therapy. But this is so interesting, I think. The best sex going on in Masters and Johnson's lab was the sex being had by committed gay and lesbian couples. Isn't that interesting? And this was not because they were practicing secret homosexual sex techniques, but because they took their time. They lost themselves in each other and in sex. Also, they tended to move slowly and to linger at each stage of stimulative response. And so in that way, they could make each step intention increments something to be appreciated. So they teased each other. You know, this is an underrated idea about teasing each other in a sexual relationship. But they teased each other in an obvious effort to prolong the other person's high levels of sexual excitement. And Masters and Johnson also noted, of course, I love reading about all of this sort of thing, and some of this material came out of The Masters of Sex, which is a biography of Masters and Johnson. Really, a really good book. So another difference was that the lesbians were almost as aroused by what they were doing to their partner as was the partner herself, not just because, say, fondling a breast turned them on, but because their partner's reaction did. So Masters and Johnson's heterosexuals, at least in their studies, failed to grasp that if you lost yourself in the tease, in the pleasure and power of turning someone on, that could be as arousing as being teased and turned on oneself. And I think it's about learning how to play, not perform. And really, my dear listening audience, that is one reason why older lovers are often better lovers, because they've learned how to do this, how to play, not just perform. Now, if you want to join this conversation, because here I am without a guest, Dr. Diana Wiley, and I rarely mention my own website, but it is drdianawiley.com. So drdiana, Wiley, Wiley.com. If you want to join this conversation, please call 888-874-4888, and of course that's a toll-free number. Katie Fitzgerald, our wonderful producer, and I got to meet her and others in the PRN studio last week. And Katie Fitzgerald is so pretty, and she joined my son and me for a drink after the show, because it's 6 o'clock in New York City. 3 o'clock here on the West Coast, but after the show we had a drink together and got a little more acquainted. Enjoyed Katie so much, and I know she's listening and I hope smiling. So back to lies we're told about sex. And another one is that there's a right way and a wrong way to have sex. Now, of course, beyond age and consent, the truth is that there are no rules as to how you can have healthy and fun sex. Of course, as I said, beyond age and consent, but healthy and fun sex. And the final lie that we're told about sex, as I think about it, is that great sex is all about what? Sexual techniques, sexual communication. Is it the spark or the bed sheets or the sex toys? Do you know that Amazon lists over 150 books with, quote, great sex, end quote, in the title? And each one of these is offering an endless stream of advice on what constitutes great sex. So perhaps it is that great sex happens in the way you uniquely put it all together. And that would be instead of following a step-by-step guide written by someone whose main goal is to sell you a book. So great sex, again, is about practice, practice, practice. It's just like when we talk about education, you first, if you're learning a guitar, you first learn how to play the chords. And then you get on to perhaps fancier guitar playing. And, of course, I think about flamenco guitar as being really fancy and really sexy, too, because it's often to accompany the tango. If you'd like to join this conversation, this is Dr. Diana Wiley, and the show is Love, Lust, and Laughter. The number is 888-874-4888. And I have the capacity to talk all by myself. I'm not sure where my sidekick Billy Sage is today. I miss him, but I can do it. So I will. And I am. So I want to talk a little bit about, since we've just covered lies we're told about sex, to talk about approaches to sex therapy. And what, you know, for us sex therapists, because I'm talking about my job as a sex therapist, and I've been doing this work for almost 30 years, so I've had lots of experience. And, of course, love having this radio show. I so appreciate Dr. Gary Null making it possible because talk radio, and radio in particular, is such an intimate medium. It's an amazing way to get out good, solid information, and most of us need lots more information about sexuality. So I really appreciate Dr. Gary Null's giving me this show on Progressive Radio Network. I'm very grateful. So, approaches to sex therapy. Now, overall, there is clinical scientific evidence, and this is thanks to lots of clinical trials. We now know that cognitive behavioral therapy is really effective, that teaching clients to think about their thoughts in new, healthier ways, so that's the cognitive part, and to act on those new ways of thinking is especially effective in the realm of sex therapy. And we do know that behavior precedes attitude, that you do certain things in new ways, especially in positive ways, and you're more likely then to have a change of attitude. And as I said, there's a good amount of evidence that cognitive behavioral therapy works. It really works. Now, most of us sex therapists owe a lot. I would say we all owe a lot to Masters and Johnson. And I alluded to the biography about them, the Masters of Sex. I do recommend that book to you. So William Masters and Virginia Johnson began their sexuality studies. They were in a small Midwest laboratory, St. Louis to be specific. And they began by working with prostitutes and volunteers. This was in the late 50s. We could not be doing this today. But these prostitutes and volunteers performed more than, are you ready for this number? It's a big one, 10,000 sexual acts in the name of science. And so here in the late 50s, Masters and Johnson convinced hundreds of men and women to shed their clothes and copulate. So, not a big surprise that eventually Masters and Johnson, this pair, became the nation's top experts on sexuality. They were even featured on the cover of Time magazine. I don't remember which year, but there they were on the cover. They were pretty famous. They explained the secrets of orgasm and, for really the first time, maybe Kinsey got into it a little bit, but the power of female sexuality And they also revolutionized the treatment methods for impotency, as they called it then. Now we call it ED, or erectile dysfunction, and premature ejaculation, and other dysfunctions, DYS functions. And this was a term that they coined. So M and J really expanded the definition of sex to the whole body. The whole body. And in 1966, they wrote Human Sexual Response. And throughout the book, the researchers encouraged open and straightforward communication between partners. You know, if couples don't communicate what they want, their needs and desires, it's kind of like going on a treasure hunt without any clues. And sometimes that's what a couple needs to do when they come to see me. In my private practice here in Seattle, I do lots of marriage counseling, and most of these couples present with sexual issues. And sometimes I have to do psychotherapy before I can do sex therapy. Because if they're angry with each other and not dealing with a conflict in their marriages, then they're certainly not going to want to make love. But back to Masters and Johnson and this Human Sexual Response book they wrote in 1966, it should come as no surprise that M and J moved on into sex therapy. And this followed the 11-year physiology project. So their therapy techniques and their writings, as well as hundreds of therapists they inspired, hundreds, are the answer to every person who questions the point of Masters and Johnson's lab work. So that's Masters and Johnson. I do want to talk about, they came up with sensate focus exercises. I use this exercise for my couples all the time. Homework, of course. There's never any overt sex in my office, of course. It's all talk therapy. And so I send them home with homework assignments. And so sensate focus is often very, very important. And we have Masters and Johnson to thank, as well as Joe LoPiccolo and Heller Singer Kaplan. And they added more to the behaviorists and teachings and techniques. So sensate refers to the senses, thus sensate focus is to concentrate attention on and through the senses. In the 1970s, they taught couples new ways to touch each other. And really what these techniques were designed to do was to disrupt the pattern of performance anxiety that often inhibits a couple's sexual enjoyment. So initially, the exercises are done without leading to intercourse. It takes the pressure off, particularly a guy who's experiencing some issues around ED, erectile dysfunction, or PE, premature ejaculation. So the goal of this kind of sensate focus is to promote physical closeness and positive touch to increase intimacy between couples. And they also are meant to realize, and many do, that they're not responsible for the other's satisfaction. They really need to focus in on their own and pleasure and give the person giving the touch, giving that person feedback. So they take turns being the giver and receiver of pleasure, about 30 minutes each. And if you think about it, from the top of our heads to the tip of our toes, we have all these erotic possibilities. And some people indeed do get stuck between the legs. And, well, that's limiting. So in addition, now I'm still talking about approaches to sex therapy, the mind-body approach to sex therapy. So let's talk about the mind first. You remember Robin Williams, his observation? He says, see, the problem is that God gives men a brain and a penis and only enough blood to run one at a time. Now, if Billy Sage were here, he would probably say that in a Robin Williams voice, although Robin Williams does so many different voices. But it's really true, and there have been lots of jokes about that in one form or another. That, but with the mind, our greatest sex organ is really between our ears. Dr. David Snarch, last April, I took a two-day intensive with this brilliant man. And, of course, his approaches work best for marriages and long-term relationships and not just for one-night stands. As I said, under the lies of sex at the opening part of a show, isn't sex supposed to happen naturally? And he says, Dr. David Snarch says, sex is not a natural function. It's a natural potential. It has to be developed, you know, like reading and speaking and language and spirituality. And I must tell you, dear listening audience, that as a gerontologist and as an older woman, I really like what Dr. Snarch says. He says, sex gets better, not worse, as you get older. Great sex is not about how your body looks or how you position it. It's not about lingerie or tight abs. It's about your frame of mind and emotional connection with your partner. He says, Dr. Snarch says, you don't work on your marriage. Your marriage works on you. It's a people-growing system. A big word, a big guiding light for Dr. Snarch is differentiation. And this involves learning how to balance your individuality, which would be your separateness, with your emotional connection to someone else. That is togetherness. So standing on your own two feet rather than trying to merge with your partner or lose yourself in love may lead to the best sex you've ever had. Now, young people often we'll talk about two hearts beating as one and this kind of merging. So it may take some life experience because Dr. Snarch says that intimacy involves being open, revealing oneself without any assurance of acceptance or reciprocity from the other. So you can say what you want without apology. You can be open, vulnerable. Actually, it's true. When two people start to feel more authentic, they're much more likely to feel closer. Differentiation really doesn't happen overnight. And so great sex is not about technique or about integrating your head. It's not about technique. It really is more about integrating your head, heart, and spirit with your genitals. So you give up the fantasy that the other person is going to complete you, and your goal changes from getting someone to love you to becoming someone capable of loving. And just before we go to the break, I want to quote J. Paul Getty. I hate to be a failure. I hate and regret the failure of my marriages. I would gladly give all of my millions for just one lasting marital success. Now, I talked about approaches to sex therapy. We did the mind part. We may do a little bit on the body part, which would be tantric sex. And then I want to go after the break into how to have bad sex and what makes a great lover and what I have learned as a sex therapist. So I know you'll want to stay with us, and we'll come back right after the break. And I look forward to having, hopefully, one or two of you calling in.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is Dr. Meir Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is Adam Kolker from the Brooklyn Jazz Underground. We're going to be hosting a weekly show every Tuesday at 5 p.m., focusing on sounds coming from the borough of Brooklyn. We'll be playing some new releases, doing live interviews, some live performances, maybe even venture out into music from some of the outer boroughs. Brooklyn Jazz Underground, Tuesday at 5, only on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Carol Brier, host of Community Currency on Progressive Radio Network every Thursday, 5 to 6 p.m. Please join us as we connect people, ideas, important information, and discover solutions to some of the most urgent problems facing us. Every Thursday, 5 to 6 p.m., Community Currency on Progressive Radio Network.
A shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
We are back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. The show is Love, Lust, and Laughter. And for the first time since the beginning of this program, which was, I'm going to say the end of February. All of the shows, by the way, many of you have discovered this, are archived. But for the first time, I'm doing this show alone. My sidekick, my humorous sidekick, Billy Sage, is not available. And so I'm talking about my job as a sex therapist. I'll go back to having guests next week. Next week on the 22nd, my guest will be Dr. Ava Cadell, and we'll talk about sexual fantasies. But I'll mention that again at the end of the show today. So my job as a sex therapist, I started the program by talking about lies we're told about sex and approaches to sex therapy. And Masters and Johnson and the mind-body approach, and I talked about the mind part of it. Let's talk about the body part, which really tantric sex. And the tantric tradition got a big boost in the United States by Margot Anand's book, The Art of Sexual Ecstasy, which was first published in 1989. There is a so-called School for Love in Tucson, Arizona, at the Miravelle Resort, and it's run by Yale-educated docs Lana and David. They're also a married couple, and their four-day workshop is called Partners, Pleasure, and Passion, and it teaches their paradigm about more and better sex. And they'll say things like good sex is intentional, not spontaneous, that mutual passion is a practice. You can have fun and get better at it, kind of like yoga or meditation. So in the tantric yoga tradition, sex is life energy that flows through the body. And its energy centers, the chakras, the heart, head, pelvis, and so on. So you and your partner can learn to channel this energy and ride it to maximum pleasure. There's some great illustrations in her book, The Art of Sexual Ecstasy. She talks about soul gazing. This is a very effective exercise that I give to some of my couples to do at home, where the couple looks into each other's eyes, touch hands, and breathe in sync to merge the energy of the heart and pelvis chakras. And then, of course, when we talk about tantric sex, we're talking about polarity, and this is the idea that sexual energy springs from opposing charges, the masculine, feminine, yin, yang. Then the greater the polarity, the more intense the sexual charge, and that's that idea. And I would say that for gay couples, the polarity can be self and other. Now, Hindu imagery comes into play, the inner Shiva, the warrior, or the Shakti, the goddess. And at Miraville Resort, private encounters between Shiva and Shakti are designed to heighten polarity. And it's all about the goddess being restored to her glory. So homework is given. It's the man's job to give pleasure and the woman's job to let go and let the goddess out. And Dr. Lana instructs the women to be responsive, but don't give him too much help or worry about his performance anxiety. Because men are often asking themselves, how am I doing? Whereas women are asking themselves, how do I look? So I read about the Miraville Resort program, and one husband reported, I didn't feel pressure to perform, only to be physical and spiritually present with my partner. All of it worked. So that was good. That was very good. I'd like to have you join the conversation. If you feel so inspired, you may call 888-874-4888. As I move into the next point of my discussion about for today, how to have bad sex. People don't usually think about this, but I think it would be useful to think about it and for me to talk about it. Because many are looking for a quick fix for sexual dilemmas. A pill, a DVD, a series of complex finger movements that will magically dispel anxiety and bring more confidence about exposing a true sexual self. You know, indeed, there may not be one way to have good sex, but I believe there are a few surefire ways to not get what you want sexually and to increase the chances of having bad sex. So here are my top ways to have bad sex. The first one is to compare yourself to others. Lots of people do this. And the media sort of, unfortunately, encourages us. Sexuality may be the most subjective of human experience. So I'd like to say to you, forget the magazine quizzes and the sex books that encourage six step to great sex, six steps to great sex. Because there is simply no meaningful way to compare yourself to a perfect stranger when it comes to your sexuality. If you want to do something useful for your sex life, focus on yourself and anyone you're having sex with. And don't turn away. Another way to have bad sex is to ignore your body. The idea, if you really, especially you ladies in the audience, listen to this, the idea of a perfect body is fiction. None of us have perfect bodies. You may be ignoring your body at the expense of genuine sexual pleasure and empowerment. It's really not easy, but working with a body you've got is one crucial part of improving your sex life. And by the way, tons of sex surveys, you'll find guys really never complain about the size of their partner's rear end. Because by the time a man wants to sleep with a woman, he finds her attractive. Period. If there's any way to free your energy from that anxiety and put it into having fun with him, believe me, you'll enjoy many more good times ahead. Some people struggle to get fully into their bodies. This is where if you can just relax and pay attention to the massaging or the sensate focus exercises, and it may help you put down some body armor. If there's been sexual trauma in your past, this may be very difficult, and you may need to get some professional help to be in the moment. But if you haven't had sexual trauma but it's still anxiety-producing at the beginning, I would suggest that you go slowly and try to enjoy the gains that you're able to make. Another way to have bad sex is to stop paying attention. Because really, sexuality is as much about awareness as it is about action. From birth to death, really, our bodies and minds never stop changing, growing, developing. And that means our sexuality never stops changing either. I might ask you, and you might call in with an answer to this, and win Great Sex for a Lifetime, Volumes 1 and 2, this great DVD produced by the Sinclair Institute that I narrated along with Dr. Lori Buckley. So how has your sexuality changed since we never stopped growing? And you might think about how your sexuality has changed. Most people do get a little more, as they get more self-confident, they become more sexually confident. Another way to have bad sex is to grow up and get serious. Sex is the closest thing that adults have to kind of play. Kind of play that we engaged in when we were kids. Native Alaskans call sex laughing time. And if you make sex just one more thing that's serious and routine, guess what? It'll lose a lot of its power and magic. And so to be able to play, and sex toys can often help you with that effort. Another way to have bad sex is to believe that ignorance is bliss. This ignorance keeps many from the risk of bad sex, the risk of STDs, the risk of too many regretful moments. If you want to turn the tide, then get out there and learn something about sex that's relevant to your own life from someone who is qualified to teach you. I'm hoping that those of you listening consider me somebody qualified to teach you. Another way to confuse to have bad sex is to confuse sex entertainment with sex education. Sex entertainment, movies and what you might see in some sex toy stores can be a fun way to explore your options. But it really isn't the same as sex education or sex therapy. If you're feeling good about your sex life and want more, sex entertainment may offer a quick boost. But if you're feeling genuinely stuck and distressed about your sexuality or your sex life, be sure and turn to a qualified sex educator, counselor, or therapist. When there's been sexual trauma, sexual abuse, molestation, it almost always needs some intervention. For 11 years, I co-led two women's sexuality groups. And they, all of the women had sexual trauma in their background. The final way I want to talk about today is how to have bad sex is to let fear be your guide. And indeed, sex can be scary. And why is that? Because, in part, sex demands that we give up control and expose ourselves. And because of this, many don't talk about their desires, don't tell their partners what they really want to do. If you're in a safe relationship where there is trust, then the more you let fear be your guide, the less you'll get out of the sexual relationship. Very important. Please call in 888-874-4888. I'd love to answer a question you might have, or, because we're going to go on now to talk about what makes a great lover, and I'd love to hear from you about that, what's your definition of a great lover, because there are as many definitions as there are, there's just lots of definitions, but I'll begin the discussion. Or might talk about it, because I'm talking alone at this point. If you browse through book titles and magazines, you'll find hundreds that promise to reveal the secrets of becoming a great lover. And there are, you've seen them all. There are tips on driving your lover wild, inventing levels of satisfaction that defy gravity, that sort of thing. And I think that overall the message it conveyed is that with the right teacher and enough hard work, you can actually become a great lover with all the right lines and all the right moves. And this would be someone, in short, who can hop into bed with anyone and create unparalleled and unforgettable sexual bliss. And I would like to propose that this is a flawed premise. I really don't believe that anyone is great with everyone. Because great sex is to some extent about chemistry between the people having it. And while there's something to be said for sexual technique and how to talk about sex, probably a great lover is the whole package. The technique and the confidence and the being able to communicate. But even with the definition of what is a great lover, you will indeed get probably at least 10 different answers, because one person's turn on can be another person's turn off. So what does that mean? Dear listeners, ask. Yes, ask your partner to talk about what they like about sex with you and what, if anything, they'd like to do differently. Because it really takes time to learn what makes another person feel good. No matter how experienced anyone is. Now, what do you think is the best sex tip in the world? Listen up. The best sex tip in the world? Well, it's a cliche, but it's to listen. Yes, listen to each other. Listen to each other. Open your heart to another. And not be tempted to say your contrary piece. A possible context for this is to get naked together, not just to have intercourse. A lot of honesty and trust can be generated this way. I suggest this to a number of the couples that I see in my private practice. And, you know, I have found that some of these folks find it helpful to tell each other some of the things they do and don't like about their bodies, because just getting their fears out in the open usually helps them feel more comfortable. It diffuses some of that, you know, by putting words to it. So again, if you call in with your definition of a great lover, Katie Fitzgerald, our producer extraordinaire, if you call in and give this definition, she'll get your mailing address, and I will send you Great Sex for a Lifetime, Volumes 1 and 2, which includes advanced sex play and positions, and if you go to bettersex.com, you can read all about these. And I narrated along with Dr. Lori Buckley. And it does show couples making love and all kinds of things. It's explicit, but we can learn so much visually, so it's a good thing. It's a good thing. So so I'd like to hear what you think is your definition for a great lover, or any other thing I've talked about up until now. We have about 8 more minutes for this program, and so I'd like to talk about, well, what I've learned as a sex therapist. Like so many other sex therapists, I have been building on the work of Master and Johnson, and so many of us are learning that, and what I've learned is that much of people's dissatisfactions about sex come from misinformation, negative attitudes, anxiety, or poor communication. And I would add to that unrealistic expectations. Now, some folks do wonder about sex therapists' private sex lives. And in one, well, I of course thought it was a fascinating survey, sex therapists reported that they didn't necessarily have wilder sex lives, that we just do it without anxiety. And this is a result of all this knowledge about sex. And I continue to learn, though. I have a big library filled with books about sexuality, and I keep buying new books. And as you heard Dr. Serena McKinsey and I discuss Mating in Captivity on October the 1st by Esther Perel. And there's a new book called Sex at Dawn, which I'm just about to read, a very provocative book. So keep on learning, and of course I'm going to go to a conference in Las Vegas the beginning of November, and that is a annual meeting for QuadAS, Scientific Society for Study of Sexuality, and I'll learn more there. Always learning, always curious. But here are a few of the things that I've discovered after almost 30 years of counseling couples. And one is, and I alluded to this, I talked about it at the top of the show, that sex doesn't always come naturally. Good sex doesn't just happen. And, of course, if it did, people wouldn't have so many sexual problems. And our study suggests that half of all couples do. And no one would even need sex therapy to learn more positive attitudes and behaviors. If they existed. And some of the sex therapy techniques, because remember I talked about cognitive behavioral approach, so we have the behavioral part where I send them home with home play assignments. Some of these feel a little mechanical at first, but, you know, like fixing a car, you need to take the parts apart before it can run smoothly again. Or I talked about learning to play a guitar. You have to learn the chords first, or learning to play a piano. So it may seem a little mechanical, but then it all eventually, if people do their homework, it fits together, and it can become then a very passionate and a work of art. This behavior preceding the attitude, a lot of times in therapy, people have to face their fears. They have to go through the pain to the pleasure, where they evolve as a human being. And some of them have to own the narcissism within and move forward to more of a connection place and follow it and look at the congruence and not the codependency. And be more relaxed, especially some guys. Is the penis up? Is the penis down? Relax. And when you relax, it's more likely to work for you. And the next thing I've learned as a sex therapist is that couples don't always want what they say they want in bed. Isn't that interesting? In some cases, deeper emotional conflicts need to be uncovered and dealt with in order to help couples fully enjoy sexual expressions and a loving relationship. And I have found that sometimes the very complaint that some people insist they want to get over often protects them from a deeper problem. And what else have I learned as a sex therapist? That when you feel least like making love is often when you need to the most. The disinterest in lovemaking can escalate into a vicious cycle of frustration and ultimately alienation. And in fact, it's in times of trouble when spouses most need the love and the comfort that healthy sexual intimacy provides. And then, of course, when we're touching, we produce more oxytocin. And then it's a positive feedback loop. And with older sexuality, we really have to be careful not to let food take the place of sex. And you remember the Rodney Dangerfield observation. He's no longer with us, but he said, I'm at an age where food has taken the place of sex in my life. In fact, I've just had a mirror put above my kitchen table. And I will say that as soon as people find out I'm a sex therapist, oftentimes their eyes light up. Well, they're either intimidated, thinking I must know everything, or more likely, they're just curious. They're just plain curious. Because the most basic thing I've learned as a sex therapist is that everyone has a question about sex. And I'm sorry that you folks today didn't have any or any comments about what makes a great lover, but that's all right. Fortunately, I was able to carry on and talk all by myself, but I love talking about sex. I think those of you who've listened to Love, Lust, and Laughter know that. And I'm so glad the show is archived, because I think that we have a better listening audience in those who download it. And so that's a good thing. And part of the purpose for this show is to normalize some sexual issues for you. And here are my wishes for you: that you will continue to grow personally and enjoy a safer, saner, more loving, and more fulfilling sexuality. It makes us all happier, healthier people when we can have a good sex life. So I wish that for you, and I'll close the show today by saying I also wish for you lots of love, lust, and laughter. Signing off, Dr. Diana Wiley, and please visit my website, drdianawiley.com. Bye-bye.
Un calibro affascini il tuo cuore, e se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro.